From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 539, Improving Help Desk with guest David Dasnevis. Recorded Monday, June 26th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is David Dasnevis, who is a former software developer and now works for Microsoft Germany as a premier field engineer focused on PowerShell, Windows 10, and client security. And he also does client workshops and development requests. And besides the work, he writes his own blog, The Power in the Shell. What a great name. And also organizes the PowerShell Munich user group and speaks at user groups and conferences on PowerShell development topics. Welcome, sir.
Hi, good morning, Richard.
PFE, some of my favorite people in the world, just because you're out there doing the real work. But a PowerShell-focused PFE, I don't think I've met before. So you are a fairly unique creature.
Yeah, very rare. So even in Germany, even more rare. I know only, I think, 1 to 2 PFEs in whole Germany who do PowerShell as a main specialization. And I don't think that we will spread too much in the next time.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. So do you have a set number of customers that you work with on a routine basis?
Actually, it's not too much. So I'm speaking at conferences sometimes, but there are not so many customers which are interested in PowerShell, which is actually very sad today. Yeah. And we are trying to push the customers into this direction because it's totally necessary. Only if you take a look at what's coming with DevOps, Windows as a Service, and all that hangs behind this all.
Yeah, that's certainly been a steady topic of conversation for me on the show. It's just this improving the delivery pipeline for software from an IT perspective. And I just don't see how you do that in the Microsoft space without PowerShell.
Yeah, actually, it's not possible, by my opinion. And if you see the roadmap of PowerShell, it's not only a scripting language anymore for server or for the Windows or for operating systems. Mm-hmm. It will become also the main language for Azure and for Linux machines. So it will be, as say, a meta language or a meta scripting language for nearly everything. And you should actually focus it because it's really powerful and also benefitable. And many people do this, but still a little lack out there.
You just don't know about it. I know you're talking about the runbook gallery that exists for Azure, that whole Azure automation side.
Yeah, nearly no customers know about this or even about Azure Stack. They don't have a clue what's standing behind it. In Germany, it's like when Azure is staying in the name somewhere, they just skip it or don't want to go into it. That's a very sad story coming here from Germany because we try to deliver the understanding to our customers, but it's a hard way.
Although I got to think it's kind of early days right now because Germany was fairly restricted on what they could do with Azure until these new German-centric Azure centers opened up, right?
Yeah, that's true. But there's one point with the German Azure because they are always like half a year and year behind of the new features. And so either you go to the public cloud, Azure cloud, or you go to the German cloud as a German customer and you always be like half a year, 1 year behind. And this actually moves the most sophisticated customers going to the normal cloud.
Going to the public cloud. And I got to think, because, you know, I had Jeff Snover on talking about Azure Stack a while ago. And he's like, listen, we're going to keep you right up to date. But I bet that's only with GA stuff, not with all the beta.
Yes, that's true.
Right. So what's running on the German cloud is going to only be the released software. They're not going to put all the beta stuff up there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are also, from the time perspective, when it's going to the public cloud, it will take some time after it's released on the German cloud. For example, all the O365 stuff, which has been around for on the Azure, on the public cloud for a long time. And we are still waiting for some parts of this for the German cloud. And it's blocking some of my customers. So the
ones you have convinced to move over, the ones who want the latest and greatest bits and are annoyed that it isn't in there yet. And then you've got a majority of folks that are, for better or worse, my experience working with German companies, they're pretty conservative. Like they're careful about what the technologies they adopt.
Yeah. The Germans are pretty conservative, like all the Europeans, I would say, actually.
Yeah, I think maybe let's not point at Germany per se. It's European companies, in my experience, are quite conservative when it comes to tech.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, for better or worse. But they, and then it just seems strange to me that you would resist PowerShell in any respect when it comes to using any of these things, just because it's what repeatable process is all about, that you want to be able to write code so that if you need to do this more than once, you do it right.
Yeah, that's true. But from my experience, you have to see how it has worked once. So you have to see the power of PowerShell of automation before you really recognize it and before you really know what it's possible with PowerShell. For example, in support desk, you can just automate everything. And I've been there. We have automated all, I will say, 80% of all tickets coming into, which did then be resolved nearly automatically. And you only recognize the power of PowerShell if you have seen the power working once.
So, and the metric there then is shortening up the response time for the customer support, right? But now, that's a lot of work you've got to do to get to be able to have someone on the phone using PowerShell successfully to resolve a ticket quickly for you to say, oh, okay, huge benefit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, very, very challenging stuff. Are you in that role? Is that you've gone that far as to actually build a prototype or a sample to show, look at how much faster these certain classes of tech support tickets can be resolved?
Actually, I switched from software developer to support desk just to take a look at the other side of a software developer, because if you're going software developing every day, it's kind of the same procedure you're doing every day. So I took a look at support desk, and there I went to my manager and said, hey, the stuff we are doing here, the people are very good and they are really doing good work, but it could be improved if you automate all this stuff, if you just set a little intelligence over this all and build up some scripts. And so I created some scripts, had the time to create the scripts. And after I created it, SLAs just flied over the normal rates, which have been there every time before. So I demonstrated this there very in detail. But it was also hard to convince the people to take this risk, actually.
Wow, no kidding. And I appreciate your dedication, because I'm like, you willingly went on to a support desk role? That's kind of nuts. That's a hard job.
But it was best choice of my life, because it's actually the complete contrast to software development. You're speaking with people all day, you get punched, it's hard.
Yeah, and you're speaking to angry people most of the time, or frustrated people.
Yeah, you're led to handle this.
Yeah, no kidding. Although I'll tell you, I've worked with a number of companies where one of the best sources of developers and IT people inside of the company comes from tech support, like learning the business, learning how customers actually use the product. Like, what a great place to learn. And and then other groups inside of the company poach from tech support, the folks that deeply understand it can really help and pull them elsewhere in. And they, I don't know, it's a really interesting model. It's frustrating for the tech support guy, because as soon as you get good, you get stolen away.
Yeah, that's true.
But I see you had a little different motivation, because you're really trying to improve the flow overall, make tech support more effective.
Yeah. Actually, we started low level, so just to automating single tickets, single steps. Then we went on to the next step, creating a complete software to automate all the tickets. So we had a decision tool, every ticket which was delivered to our desk was then automatically grabbed by this tool and moved to the dedicated scripts. And if there was no solution, it was moved to our manual dedication. And this was actually, we started very small. Mm-hmm. It flied like not from 0 to 100 within 3 months. Like after 3 months, everything was automated. Wow. And no one ever have thought that it could be this great. So at first, when we started, we were like 12 people and 120 tickets per day going right. in. And it was a hard time. Like,
oh yeah, you're slugging through them. Yeah.
Yeah, third level support desk, you know this, like half an hour to up an hour for every ticket. And sure. You will be lucky if you solve half of them all. And then at the end, when we reached the end stadium of automation, we had like 200 tickets per day, 8 people, and we were playing ping pong in the meantime. So it was quite a good investment to set all the automation there.
Yeah. Now, I mean, of course, I think about PowerShell from a command line perspective. Do your tech support folks have to memorize the commands to know what to run for resolving each of these tickets?
It depends. What we did normally, we had kind of the more sophisticated engineers, which knew all the commands and all the stuff. Mm-hmm. But we also had the people which had not been too familiar with PowerShell commands and so on. And we tried to make it as easy as possible for everyone.
Sure.
So we created like a framework on top, and if you wanted to clean up the storage from a computer, which is pretty easy job, you just click the script, it asks you for the computer name, press enter, and it just worked to make it as simple as possible. You could also pushing all the command lines by yourself, but doing it as easy as possible and to automate as many as possible.
Now, are you still using something like Service Manager for bringing in the tickets or the initial contact or anything like that? Like, what about the administration of the tickets themselves?
Yeah, we actually had not Service Manager in at that moment. It was actually not for Microsoft working right. there. And we had, I think the name was Peregrine. And we had a different overlay to grab all the information and doing the clicks like the overlay. But this was like the end stadium where we just read from the tool itself, from the titles, what kind of topic it is. And if it has the typical key phrases, we just pushed out the script on the machines, which we could read out. Mm-hmm. And the engineer just needed to solve the ticket then after he proved it worked finally.
And I got to think that these scripts are good for all kinds of things. Like one of my favorite stories around stuff like PowerShell scripts is like the complete onboarding of a new employee, which can be handled as a tech support work item, right? It's just like, hey, here's a new employee. They need their email account. They need their privileges assigned. They need their phone allocations, like all of those things. And a PowerShell script can literally be a pretty much a single set of clicks and you're off. All those things get created.
Yeah, that's actually true. We had actually on the left side of our team, like one room at the next door, and they were also automating a lot of stuff. They weren't using PowerShell actually, so they did it with I think it was AutoID or something. Mm-hmm. But they recognized the power of automation also, because they were doing all the time the same steps all day. And as you know, humans do errors.
Yes.
And if they do the same thing every time, they do even more errors.
Yeah, they'll just keep doing it over and over again. But
yes.
Did you find, were you doing analysis on the tickets to sort of say, hey, of the 120 a day we're getting, there's like 5 buckets that are 10 each, like half of our work at a given day are the same things over and over again.
Yeah, actually, we had like typical categories. One of our pain points was like Java tickets. So mm-hmm. any problem around with Java, wrong installation, whatever. And we took a look at all the problems and if there's any solution to solve them all. And the simple solution for this was to completely uninstall the Java version, cleaning up the whole system, reinstalling Java.
Yeah.
And this took like 7 minutes, 6 minutes. And you don't need to take a look what the dedicated problem was, because with cleaning everything up in detail, and it was very in detail, I can tell you, we did it for all these tickets. So every ticket which was coming in, like the Java cleanup was just run with the dedicated version which a user needed, and it just worked afterwards every time. So we had like a solution rate of 99.5%, something like this.
Wow, right. And I got to think that's where you start, right? It's like what one script is going to have the biggest bang on my text report requirements?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of time, it's just winning everything because 7 minutes wins versus every dedicated troubleshooting. When you take a look at the problem itself and try to investigate what the user has made something wrong or whatever, it's just winning against everything.
Absolutely. David, give me 1 second here to pay the bills. Because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. And one of the leading projects called Already focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time. Humanitarian Toolbox is deploying this application in the field right now in 2017, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. Humanitarian Toolbox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. And you're listening to Run As Radio, talking to David Dasnevis. Dasnevis, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. And I love this story about a help desk solution using PowerShell. We were talking about fixing Java, which, you know, seems to be a part of everybody's life, it seems, these days. So you're actually doing remote calls in PowerShell to get access to the machine to uninstall Java and reinstall it for them?
Yes, actually we do this, but it's not the whole story. We do a lot of stuff in detail more, but to keep it simple, yeah, uninstall and install and fix the computer and the applications.
Right. So I got to imagine you've written a fairly sophisticated script to be able to reach out to that machine, get the security profiles right, be able to take control, do all those repairs. It beats the heck out of VNC for doing that and mouse clicking your way through the problem.
Yeah. Definitely, because just to explain you the problem in detail, it's you need to clean up the registry keys. You need to clean up folders and files at I think 10 different positions. Then you have some application settings which you need to fix. Some startup sessions.
I hate to even say registry entries, but you know they're going to be there too.
Yeah, definitely, and it's like. I have the script there. I think it's like 1,000 lines of code.
Oh, man.
To clean everything up, to be really sure that everything is cleaned up. And if you try to do this manually, you will take like nearly a half an hour to up to one hour, actually.
Well, now you're getting into what your old cadence was like, right? It's like, okay, you know what you have to fix. This is not a diagnostics problem. This is this just takes a while. There's no fast way to do this.
Yes, that's the point.
That's just sort of an interesting reality. Now, you've got a group of tech support people all using these scripts. Do you use source control and testing infrastructure? Like, you come from a development background, so this stuff won't freak you out as much as the average IT person, but is that all in place?
Yeah, this was actually one of my first steps, which I placed in the technical support team there, was subversion system. We used Git and also kind of testing techniques, but it was actually not PESTA. It was like unit testing by ourselves at that point. But nowadays, I also use PESTA to test my functions, etc. And we also deployed these scripts to a centralized repository to make it downloadable for all the people around there.
Well, and I've talked about this before on the show, but this idea, you know, for a long time as an IT person, my scripts were sort of my personal secret sauce. I carried them around on a 3.5-inch floppy because I'm old, or a USB key, but you would never share them. I think you have to write your scripts very differently if multiple people are going to use them, like they more carefully.
Yeah, that's definitely true, because you have to think always, is this understandable for another person?
Sure.
And you have to make the framework and the commandlets as easy as possible to understand. So you have also to comment your code also to provide additional help files, so that if there is a person which is not aware of the commandlet, can try to learn it by themselves.
Right, and that all the failure modes are non-destructive.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing, is if they do get the commands wrong, you're going to come back and say, hey, you know, that wasn't right. I haven't done anything. Don't sweat it. Here's, here's a little help doc or something like that. I think that's the scary thing. I mean, how many times in the early days of Active Directory, even using the AD tools directly, did you accidentally propagate carnage, across all of your AD servers? And PowerShell is just this huge amplifier for that. You could really wreak havoc with a badly behaved script.
Yeah, that's true. I've also been at customers which had critical situations. This is a engagement type for us PFEs. When something breaks at the customer side and they need a PFE very fast, when they deleted all users or deleted a complete OU at the customer side, and they were just sweating and waiting for me like, oh, you're here. Great. Come, take a look.
Right. Save us. And your first question is, where are the backups? Like, what are backups?
Exactly. What backups? What backups? Is a backup?
Oh, no, we're right over here from 2008.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know the drive broke years ago.
Yeah, but that's fun. So you're the hero, and sometimes...
Fun for you. I'm beginning to believe you're crazy, David. Like, that you think is fun? Oh, my goodness.
Well, it's contesting. And at the end of the day, if you make it, if you save the customer and everyone is happy, it's a good feeling, actually.
Yeah. No, it's an adrenaline rush to be in a firefight. I mean, I come from a web performance, web tuning point of view. And once in a while, you're there when it really hits the fan. And I know I have the reflexes of, you stay calm, you measure carefully, you move cautiously, you don't get wound up, because you're not going to make it better. But I think it also comes from a position of experience. You know you can recover that OU, you're going to be fine, you're calm.
Yeah, but sometimes you're at the customer side and you don't even know what the error is about. Yeah. If you're working on call, sometimes you get also technologies you don't know about. And then it gets really funny. you always have an escalation engineer behind.
Yeah.
And you're speaking with the escalation engineer and he will just tell you what to do. And you're like only the ears and eyes to help the escalation engineer.
Yeah, you're just the extension of the folks back. Every time I've actually had to call PSS for something, my usual reaction at the end of it was, I waited too long to call these guys. Like, I've created myself more grief and more fear and more pain because I didn't call into the experts and let them just give me a sense of where they actually were. It's just so easy to do.
Yeah. You know? That's true.
I mean, how many times do you get that message, please contact your administrator? You're like, I am the administrator. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly, yeah. Then you're at the customer side, and the first thing you hear is, oh, we have this problem like 3 days now, or a week, or 2 weeks, and we need to fix it in the next hour.
Right. It's like, how? Next hour, right? Really? After two weeks? I think these are false crises you're creating for me here. No question about it. But you've got that tech support mentality, I could tell, of like, don't worry, we're going to be fine. Let's work through, wind down. We'll get there.
Yeah, I've learned it, how you can keep the people calm, even if they want to punch you.
Yes.
So it's okay. Yeah.
How can you be calm at a time like this? Because I know we can fix this.
Exactly. Yeah, always be confident.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know who's going to have to die to get this to happen, but we'll get through this one way or the other. How long could it take to type all that stuff back in, really? David, any other advice here? What about securing your PowerShell scripts, or, you know, locking them down, being sure that the ones you've got, that the folks are using, are the right ones when new versions come up? Do you have particular procedures around that?
Oh, yeah. That's actually a really good point. Mm-hmm. I have many customers now working with PowerShell or configuring PowerShell, and actually, the most customers are just afraid of PowerShell.
Right.
They read it in the news. All is full of malware and attacks and hacks and PowerShell exploits, PowerShell frameworks to grab all the information and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they just want to turn it off. But actually, many of my customers even don't know that PowerShell is one of the best choices if you want to do remote computing. But because of all the news and the not knowing of the technology which is standing behind PowerShell remoting, they don't use it.
Right. Which seems crazy to me. I mean, obviously, every technology has exploits in it. It can be exploited. Keep it patched, maintain it. But I'm interested in your procedures around what's the right thing to do so that PowerShell doesn't bite you.
Yeah, exactly. Then the first thing you have to do is actually to update the PowerShell version. As you mentioned, yep. Just keep it up to date.
That's half the battle right there.
Yeah, and this is actually a really good recommendation also for Windows 7 machines. Mm-hmm. So not only if you're going now to Windows 10, to update to PowerShell version 5. And it's that easy. It's just like a KBI tickle which you need to deploy with your SCCM or your deployment tool to all your machines. And that's it.
Yeah, so right off the bat, get the latest version. Right now that's, I think, 5 or 5.1.
Yeah, 5.1, WMF 5.1. Yeah,
get the WMF. That's the right way to get it, right? Is in the form of WMF.
Yeah. And after this, you should take a look at PowerShell remoting if you want to use it. And actually, you want to use it because every session is encrypted by default. So after the first authentication, the session is encrypted with an advanced encryption standard key, 256 bits. And there are only two ports in use. It's 5985 for HTTP and 5986 for HTTPS. Mm-hmm. So it's a very controlled remoting session. And what many people don't know, you have a huge number of logging capabilities, and each or nearly everything is locked and possible to be locked with PowerShell, which is actually not possible with the other scripting languages.
Nice. Yeah. So it literally can, as part of the configuration, keep exact copies of all the commands that were issued.
Yeah, and you can also specify very granular who is possible to use PowerShell remoting. So by default, this is actually just the administrators group, and you can even set up SSL with a certificate, and you can even be more granular and specify IP filters to allow only dedicated IP sections to be remoted.
Well, and the fact that you've got fixed set of ports makes your life easy too, right? Like, there's a lot that networking people can do once you know it's these ports, these machines. Like, this concept of just enough administration will really work in this scenario.
Yeah, and just enough administration is actually a really good point here. This is actually a framework or a module which was really evolved in PowerShell version 5 or... it's actually staying there since 2013 and no one knows about
it. No, I'm totally with you. They just don't know.
Yeah. And it's so great. You don't have to have any administration rights for, like, let's say we want to reset administration password from Active Directory. And normally you need to have AD rights to do this.
Yes.
You need to have AD rights to reset this password. But with Gia, you enable or you set a dedicated just enough administration server up, mm-hmm. Where you define granular who has what rights, and he needs to connect to this endpoint, to this server,
right,
with an endpoint configuration. And if he, I will say, is in the organizational unit of the Active Directory password resetters, he will be able to reset his password.
Right.
And then only a virtual account is created, which has this administration rights or this dedicated rights, which you configure at this point. And at no point, the user is elevated with these rights. So the support desk, which is mainly the target for hackers, is nearly out of scope then.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
So, and walking back to your original scenario, you're talking about fixing Java on these remote workstations.
Yeah.
Would you create an account that was the only account that had the privileges to do that kind of invocation, or is it just a tech support account?
Well, at that point, every one of our supporters had actually admin rights.
Right.
But the best way would have been to configure like a Gia server, mm-hmm. and set the rights for the virtual account there. And every one of our technical people who just remote to this JustEnough administration server and fire the script on this one. Right. And the script would be executed in this additional write level, mm-hmm. which is the administrator level, to uninstall or to install Java again.
Nice.
So let's speak what the end could look like. It's having a complete support desk without administrators, but everyone can execute scripts with administration rights.
Without actually giving the users those rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you configure this at the endpoint, so at the just administration endpoint, and you will always see the logins, who has done mm-hmm. what, and who has executed what scripts. So you have a complete list, what has been done the past day, the past week, etc. And you can very granular specify all the commandlets which can be executed, even the properties you sure. can define. And this is actually a really great feature, and no customer really knows about it and wants to use it. But that's the point with the lack of the knowledge about PowerShell, actually.
Just not knowing it's there. So, and if I'm following you correctly, now we have detailed logs of exactly the activities that the tech support people took on behalf of the user when they call in for help.
Yes. So if you use JustEnough administration, mm-hmm. then you have all these logs which went over this JustEnough administration server. Now let's speak about the normal administrator, which don't have this JustEnough administration server,
right.
this endpoint. They can now use with PowerShell version 5, the system-wide transcript, module logging, and script log logging. So these are the big three logging categories. And here's a big advice. You should enable script log logging via GPO, because this dedicated shows you what has been executed in these blocks of code
nice.
By the PowerShell engine.
Yeah.
And you know, Richard, that there are many techniques out there like obfuscation, where malware is obfuscated.
Sure.
And this one can actually also be grabbed with script log logging to a huge number.
I'm sort of admitting the reality here that you're not going to block every potential exploit. You can make it very hard. But what scares me most is when someone can come in, make a change, and come out, and you just have no evidence it ever happened. So stuff like script log logging, so that at least you can figure out what they did and how they did it.
Actually. Then the next point actually is about how can you now take control what scripts are executed and what not.
Right.
So here comes constraint language mode into play, where you think about to limit scripts to the simple capability of the PowerShell language. And by this, you just take off all the bad and black hat hacking frameworks, because they need to have this, I say, Win32 APIs, additional commandlets.
Right.
They need to work with COM objects. And this is actually not possible with constraint language mode. So you need to define with App Locker or Device Guard mm-hmm. an enforcing policy. Let's say you have like a folder that's the script for the scripts folder. There you place all your scripts.
Yep.
And we keep it very simple. And this folder, every script which is in this folder is executed, which is lying there, is executed in full language mode. So if you have very complex scripts, they will still work. And every other script won't work.
Mm-hmm.
So this is actually the idea of this.
The challenging part then is got to be when you update a script, you have to go re-register it.
Speaking of this folder, you have to put it into this folder, but
right.
this is actually not a good idea in long term. So this would actually just be a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
In the next step, you would sign your PowerShell scripts with a code signing certificate.
Right.
So you need to have a PKI environment. Then you define App Locker in allow mode to only execute scripts which are signed with your certificate or Device Guard with enforcing mode. And then these scripts will still be executed in full language mode. But here comes the point, if you want to modify them, you need to take also a look to update your certificate on this script. So you have to think about setting up a good structure for releasing and publishing your PowerShell scripts.
Yes.
And this is actually a good starting point to also think about versioning and centralized signing of your scripts. and you need to think before you start with this great movement.
Yeah, this is a huge subject all by itself. We may have to do another show, David, just talking about the right procedures in the, because there's been signing in PowerShell for, geez, 10 years since the very early days of it. But to really set up the set of policies so that when a new version of a script's put in, that you get it properly signed, put it in the central repository, and then map it to AppLocker so that the security models know, okay, that's a script that's allowed to execute with these contexts. It's just not a small set of steps. But once you get it right, I think it makes your life way easier and just sort of takes a lot of that exploit risk out of PowerShell entirely.
Actually, yes. So it's a long way to do this and to accomplish this, but you start very small. You start with, let's say you have today PowerShell scripts and no AppLocker or no device guard. Then you will start with AppLocker in audit mode. The next step will be to enforce deny mode. So you know what are the scripts you don't want to use. And the last step would be the allow mode. And with device guard, it's the same story. You start at some point and then you have to clean up all your scripts and to get this onto your roadmap. I see many customers in front of this topic and they are just pushing their hands into the air and saying, okay, this is a lot of work we need to do. Okay, then we won't do it.
Yeah, no. And that's not the, but, and I appreciate what you're talking about here is changing the way that applications are managed inside of the organization as a whole. I mean, that's the ultimate manifestation of that. If PowerShell is the thing that gets you started down that path, so much the better. But, you know, in the end, we really do want all our apps managed this way inside of the org.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I see a lot of enterprise customers, they even don't know about all the applications. I've been at customers, we have made some projects there, like a Java upgrade, and starting with 400 Java applications, they thought they had 400. You won't trust me, but in the end, we had a list with 1,200 Java applications.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all, my friend. I've been through exactly that experience. Everybody tells me they know how many apps they have, and they're wrong. It's always more than you realize. Very interesting stuff. Wow, David, so much fun to talk to you. I love this coming from a tech support angle because that, you know, you can argue back and forth with IT about automating pipelines, but seeing the productivity boost that the tech support folks would have with this, and that is easy, that's an easy win. But then as you start to manage those scripts better and better to actually ripple better security through your whole organization, I'm excited about this. This is more people need to know. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk about it.
Thank you.
What's next for you, sir? Where can we see you speak?
Well, I think the next conference will be PowerShell Conference Asia, where we'll also speak about PowerShell security. This time in English, I had it also in German, the PowerShell Conference Europe. And additionally, I will also speak about classes, going a little bit deeper. And let's see if I can win some more people to use PowerShell there.
I hope you can too, David and Nevis. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.